So what are we going to do, questions and answers, is that right? So anyway, it's nice to be back here. This is my favorite temple in the whole world. Well, you have more questions. How can I give up my wife? Oh, sorry. She's not here, is she? Gotta have a sense of humor here, though. So, anyway, it's nice to see everybody from all over. The reason it's my favorite temple, there's so much life here, so many enthusiastic, nice, young devotees. Panchatattva is here. You have a good temple president. Is he listening?
He's cooking downstairs.
He's cooking?
Yeah, he was from
Okay, good. You have a good temple president. And anyway, it's the best temple ever. Isn't it? It's all right. So, I guess we'll take questions. When does association with non-devotees become detrimental to spiritual progress? Wow. Well, we got some music here. That was Baladev's wife calling after I made that. After I addressed his question about leaving his wife. Anyway, so when does association with non-devotees become detrimental to spiritual progress? Actually, let me unpack that question a little bit. The word non-devotee sort of creates like a really divisive, everyone understand the divisive word? It creates like a mood of us and them. So I like to see, according to the way Krishna describes in the Upanishad, Yastu Sarvadi Bhutani, that we're all in this together. That somehow or other there's people who don't quite understand Krishna consciousness yet, but they're devotees, but they don't know it. It's just like, so I don't like the word non-devotees because everybody's a devotee. It's just like if someone has amnesia, that is, they forget who they are. So the method is to remind them who they are. And we recognize them if they happen to be a relative. We recognize they're our brothers or our sisters. And so that word I don't like. Non-devotees. I would say aspiring devotees who don't know they're aspiring. Well, depending not only with people who are aspiring devotees, but also with people who are practicing Krishna consciousness right now, the methodology or the ways that we interact is determined by their level of devotional service. For example, if someone is a more advanced devotee, we reveal our minds to them. And we say, I'm having trouble chanting. Can you help me? And if someone is equally advanced, what we do is we make friendship with them. We go hang gliding with them. What else do we do? Roller skating, hang gliding. And if someone, some things are humorous. And then if someone's not as advanced as us, then we try to help them come to Krishna consciousness. So it just depends on the type of association. Obviously, if someone is not yet recognized that they are devotees of Krishna, then at that point we don't want to reveal to them the struggles that we're having in Krishna consciousness. In other words, the association should not be based upon our taking shelter of them. That's all. I mean, otherwise we can associate. I don't find association with non-devotees to be particularly detrimental, non-devotees, using that word again, with those who are not yet recognized their devotees to be especially detrimental unless we say to them, I'm having trouble with the spirit. Like if you go to a psychiatrist and doesn't happen to be a devotee and say, I'm struggling chanting Hare Krishna. They said, that's because you're not having enough illicit sex, intoxication, meeting, gambling, and all those other nice things. So I think it we gauge our association upon who we're with. That's all. And we give our friendship to those who are not yet practicing Krishna consciousness. And I think as long as we're strict in our own sadhana, that we're protected. And we fix our minds on the goal of Krishna consciousness. You know, why are we here? I mean, oftentimes, this is a bigger point. Oftentimes we do things in Krishna consciousness without thinking of the why question. We think of the how and the what, but we don't understand or don't remember why we're doing it. We take Krishna consciousness in a very ritualistic way. For example, you know, why do you chant your japa? Well, because I have to. Why do you eat prasadam? Because I have to. And why do you chant your obeisances? You should be thinking of why you're doing something when you're doing it. Like if you're offering obeisances, you should be thinking of the meaning of it. So unfortunately, we have a lot of different, or fortunately, we have a lot of different practices which we consider to be rituals in Krishna consciousness. And the more we do them, the more we may tend to forget the reason for doing them. We just put ourselves on automatic pilot. I've given this an example. Some of you have heard this example before. That, like in an airplane, there's something called automatic pilot. That is, the pilots can just like turn on automatic pilot. It's like they have, I don't know if you know about this, they have self-driving cars now. You ever heard of that? Automatic, and they crash sometimes too. So there were, once upon a time, there were two pilots who put the plane, it was a commercial jet, on automatic pilot. And they forgot they were supposed to be flying the plane. And they started talking about football. And the plane went about 200 kilometers further than where they were supposed to land. So what happened is that the tower, or the radio control, they were calling the airplane. They said, where are you? And they couldn't reach them because they were talking about football. And then they sent up some jets to sort of shoot them down because they thought they were hijacked. You know, hijacked. Mm-hmm. They got. And so finally these pilots looked out the window and they saw the jets on the side and they said, what's happening? And then they looked and they found out they had overshot their destination by 200 kilometers. So they turned back, landed safely, and lost their jobs. Obviously. So, in the same way, we are doing things like chanting, or I mentioned before, offering obeisances, and we're just doing it automatically. We're not thinking of what we're doing, why we're doing it. And, of course, in Sanskrit, there's a word called niyamagraha, which basically is the same thing, which means to do things without the spiritual mood or spiritual loving mood towards Krishna. And therefore, we begin to associate, not with people who are not yet in Krishna consciousness, we begin to associate with our mind. And our mind is actually more dangerous, I think, than people who are not yet in Krishna consciousness. So, second part, where can one draw the line with friendships with classmates, acquaintances, colleagues, etc.? Don't eat meat. Don't go. Don't eat meat. Don't smoke marijuana. Even electronic marijuana cigarettes. You should not smoke. They have them? They probably do. The main thing is don't reveal your mind in confidence. because the one of the symptoms of loving exchanges between devotees is revealing the mind in confidence, and devotees can help us. For example, I'll give you an example of my own mother, and she's still alive. She's only 91 years old, and I speak to her all the time, but I don't talk to her about my inner realizations in Krishna consciousness. She's not a devotee. Oh, she's an aspiring devotee. She's a devotee. So I don't talk to her about that. But, you know, we still have a very nice, loving relationship. And she's beginning to become more and more favorable to Krishna consciousness because she sees that I'm more or less normal. Probably less than more. But anyway, at least around her I act normally. She even goes to Rath Yatra, sees Lord Jagannath in New York when there's Rath Yatra. She goes with me. So I just don't reveal my mind in confidence. I mean, sometimes I end up saying things to her that I shouldn't say. Like one time she was talking to me on the phone. She said, "Oh, I got to go out and buy some fish." And I couldn't restrain myself. I said, "You're a cannibal." She said, "What? How could you say that?" I said, "The fish has feelings, just like you do." She said, "Oh!" And then I said, "Well..." That was almost the end of that relationship. So you have to be careful just to give people what they're ready to hear. One of the offenses on chanting is to instruct the glories of the Lord to those who are not ready. You can take this microphone away. Yeah, to those who are not ready to hear. So in other words, we have to adapt how we present ourselves and how we present Krishna consciousness according to time, place, and circumstance. That's all it means. I mean, I have many friendships, and I admire many people who are not devotees for specific qualities that they have. For example, I'm studying something, a very interesting topic, those of you who watch some of my classes on Facebook, something called intelligent design. Anyone's heard of intelligent design before? Intelligent design means somehow or other to prove that this universe was designed. It didn't all happen by chance, which is intelligent. Just like you have a new floor here in the temple room, right? Did it happen by chance? Did someone just throw some wood up in the air? And then new floor came about? No. It was planned out, paid for, constructed, assembled, like that, and it doesn't squeak anymore, right? That's pretty good. So I'm studying. The point is I'm studying this and speaking quite a bit about scientific knowledge, and I'm learning a lot of this from people who are not in the Krishna consciousness movement. And I really appreciate what they're doing. And I admire them. And also I see the qualities that they have are coming from Krishna. Does that make sense? So I don't like to draw a line between devotees and non-devotees. It's just like, it's just so artificial. It keeps me from reaching out and giving them my association or Krishna's association. Still, I don't drink with them. I don't smoke with them. What else do I do? I don't go to discos, karaoke. Except with Dharma. He does Krishna conscious karaoke. So, anyway. So, here's the same question. Can association with a devotee be detrimental to spiritual progress if they sometimes engage in materialistic... What are materialistic activities? Prabhupada said that we should do some recreational activities. We all have needs for recreation, fun. that may come as a surprise to the brahmacharis here. You have a need for fun, you have a need for food, everybody knows that. You have a need for air, light, all these are basic human needs. And also devotees have needs for a need for recreation. So it depends on what the materialistic activity is. Actually, I don't like to say materialistic activity, I just say recreational activity. So just like for years I used to play volleyball with the devotees until I threw my arm out. But that's another issue. It just depends. I mean, if you're talking about things violating the regulative principles, I'd say that's not a good idea to associate with devotees in that way. But otherwise, you know, just do some recreation, have some fun in life. You don't want to get so, like, uptight, hate to use that expression, that you don't have fun. All right, here's another one. Can devotees listen to non-devotional? This is another non-devotional thing. I don't like to define things by what they're not, because then you're just like looking at people like demons or something like that. The demons are out there. So can devotees listen to music that is not about Krishna? Well, I mean, there's no prohibition. Of course, there are the three modes of nature, so one has to be aware that even in Krishna conscious music, sometimes the presentation is tinged with a different mode of nature. You know, you can have kirtans where the kirtan leader is impassioned. Probably not in ignorance, because he'd be sleeping. I remember there was one guitar player, not devotee, a band, before I joined the movement, he would, at the end of his set, he would smash the guitar. Yeah, you don't mention names. Don't mention names of demons. Anyway, I think we should, if we're going to listen to music, or even in devotional music, or music about Krishna, music should be in the mode of goodness that helps you remember Krishna. So Prabhupada, it's interesting, Prabhupada, when I was with Prabhupada, he would regularly listen to something called Chennai music in the morning. Anyone's heard of Chennai? Chennai music. They play it in Mayapur. And that Chennai music was played by, I think his name was Bijmal Khan, who happened to be a Muslim. So Prabhupada would listen to it, or have it played for everybody. It was on the loudspeakers all over Mayapur. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Nobody know what I'm talking about. The Chennai music. And I cannot imitate Chennai music, so I'm not going to do it. But it's a very interesting music, and it put people in a certain mood. So at the time of the dawn, so people were ready to execute their Krishna consciousness. So I would say music can help you in Krishna consciousness, and also it's a question of what you consider to be anti or non-devotional music. What do you consider to be it? I mean, if it's a particular type of instrument, like we just use a guitar, is that a karmi instrument? Or the pants I'm wearing are karmi pants? Which is, everybody else is here. Very few people wearing devotional clothes. So I think it's a question of how you use something rather than the thing itself. I mean, for example, the harmonium is a Western instrument. It did not originally come from India. It was based on the accordion and the piano from the Western world. So I think anything could be used in Krishna's service. or any type of music. So anyway, so if something helps your Krishna consciousness, listen to it. And that's what Prabhupada used Shanai music. How can we maintain faith in Prabhupada? Srila Prabhupada, that's another question. Well, first of all, we have to learn about Prabhupada. So what I'd recommend is that the devotees and everybody hear regularly about Srila Prabhupada's life. There are so many biographies. We have, of course, the Prabhupada Lilamrita. We have Mukunda Maharaj wrote some books. Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote some books. Right now, Jayapataka Maharaj is writing a book about his interactions with Srila Prabhupada. And so the more you hear about Srila Prabhupada, the more faith will grow. Prabhupada is our role model. He's the Bhagavad Gita in action. Like, if you want to understand how to apply Bhagavad Gita in the modern age, Prabhupada is the perfect example. Like, if you take the example of Arjuna, you'll simply want to go out and start shooting people. At least, you know, people who are not Krishna conscious. But if you take the example of Prabhupada, then you'll be willing to execute austerities to do anything to help people. Because Prabhupada's example is of someone who is an ocean of compassion, you know, Vanchakalpata Rubyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyavacha. So the more you hear about Prabhupada on a regular basis, and also you hear from Prabhupada, you read his books, and the more you practice what Prabhupada says, then the faith gets maintained. But it's a question of knowing who Prabhupada is. One thing I've discovered is that when I travel around the world, most of the devotees, the newer devotees, have not read the Lilamrita, or practically any of the biographies about Prabhupada. I mean, I could ask you all right now, just to test. Who here has read the whole Prabhupada Lilamrita? Okay, we got about, what percentage would you say that? 25%. Yeah, about 25%. That's not a good percentage. Because how are you going to have faith in someone if you don't know them? Like Prabhupada would often say, how can you love Krishna unless you love and know Krishna? How can you love God without knowing God? So how could you have faith in Prabhupada? So I know that whenever a new biography of Prabhupada comes out, I immediately grab it and start reading it. Of course, nowadays we don't have so much of a reading culture as we did when I was young. You know, most of the times people are walking around with their... Where's my mobile phone? Walking around with their mobile phone. And their texts are in the average of 144 characters. And people think in terms of 144 characters, their span of attention is much less. So but in any way, hear about Prabhupada or see his biography or read about Prabhupada, and then you maintain your faith in Prabhupada. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. So, all right. How does one know when one is ready for a diksha initiation? When one is on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, you perfectly realize you're not the body. Someone can stick a pin in you and you don't feel pain. You see Krishna. No. One is ready when one feels secure and sure that they will be able to continue chanting their rounds and following the principles for their whole life. And one has to think about it very, very carefully. That's how you know. And it requires determination. Understanding that, and thinking and concentrating that Krishna consciousness is the goal of my life, serving Krishna and serving Prabhupada is the goal of my life, and being convinced of that. Basically being convinced. I know, I took initiation in 1905. No, that's a joke. Now, January 19th. Actually, this date. Actually, I took First Nation January 1972. Wow. How old am I now? 48 years. 47. Okay, 47 years. 47 years ago. And since that date, I've never failed to chant my 16 rounds, of course, following the four regular principles, because I've always had that commitment in my mind and the determination that I'm going to be Krishna conscious and please Prabhupada. Because I had a personal relationship with Prabhupada. Oh, that's another point that's very important. One should have a personal relationship with the spiritual master, because commitments are based on personal relationships. Whoops, what's that? A bug?
A spider.
A spider. Okay. Chant Hare Krishna. You can bring him here if you want. So, commitments are based on personal relationships, that you really want to please someone. In the beginning, we may not feel that relationship with Krishna. So therefore, ultimately, we have that relationship with the devotee of Krishna, the spiritual master. So just like what I'm doing, my commitment is based upon my relationship with Prabhupada, that I want to please Prabhupada. Every day I ask myself, am I doing what is pleasing or will please Prabhupada? So why is siksha not enough? Well, the reason siksha, we don't want to say not enough. Like, siksha is everything. But it's important to make a formal commitment. When you make a formal commitment, that is initiation. It fixes the commitment in your mind and your consciousness. Without doing that, that vow, you know, the essence of diksha is not just getting your Hare Krishna beads and your Hare Krishna name. The essence of diksha is actually making a vow. Just like the essence of marriage is not the wine or the, what else you do in marriages? I don't know, I'm a sannyasi. A ring, what else? Anything else?
Credit.
What?
Credit loan.
Credit loan. Oh, credit loan. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's an interesting joke. there's a man who just got married. He has children, and his children all have these different Apple products. So someone has, I have an iPad. And the, you know, one of the children have an iPad. One of the wife has an iPhone. An iMac, and the man says, I paid. You understand? iPhone, iMac, iPad, I paid. So, anyway, so whatever happens in marriage, you know, the ring and the whatever, all the fancy saris and everything, the real essence of the marriage is a promise. You understand? Just like in America, the promise is like through happiness. It's almost like Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter. Happiness, distress, through summer and winter season. then you remain faithful. And so that's why diksha is important, because you're making that commitment before the deities. And Krishna's accepting that, and the spiritual master is accepting that. And also, the acharyas say that it's necessary. It's part of the process. Like, if you take siksha, part of taking siksha is learning about the process of devotional service, and when you learn, diksha is one of the aspects of the process of devotional service. How to find inspiration for chanting daily if we don't have a taste for the holy names yet? Well, We chant. There's different reasons why we can chant. One has to come up with their own reason. That has to be a personal thing. Like, every day when I chant, I have different reasons why I'm chanting. Of course, I do have a taste for the name, hopefully, after all these years. But I have different reasons, or what we call sankalpas, which means intention. One day I'm chanting with the intention of helping a particular devotee. For example, every day I get messages that this devotee is suffering because of this, or this devotee's parent passed away. Even here on the way to the temple, you know, I was responding to some messages like that. And they were saying, please pray for us. Pray for my mother or whatever. And so when I chant, I pray for people. When I chant, I pray to please Srila Prabhupada. So for different days, it may be something else that inspires me. Everyone needs to find whatever inspires them that particular day and chant for that particular purpose. Like, you have the story of Dhruva Maharaj, who is chanting. Everyone knows the story, Dhruva Maharaj? He was chanting for a kingdom greater than that of Lord Brahma. So I'm not suggesting that the temple president should chant for a temple bigger than Sridhar Mayapur. Anyway, so... but there's always a Krishna-conscious reason to chant, to please my spiritual master, to become Krishna-conscious, to save someone, to escape from the suffering of this world. Just like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he has a Shikshashtaka. And in the different verses of the Shikshashtaka, there are different moods that are mentioned for chanting the holy name. For example, you have I Nanda Tanucha Kinkaram Patitam Mam Vishameya Bhavam Budo. Kripya Tapa Padapankaja Stita Duli Sadrasam Vachitaya Jaya Shri Shri Panchatapra Panchatapra. O son of Nanda Maharaj, I am your eternal servant. But somehow or other, I have fallen down into this horrible material world. Please fix me as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. So there's different reasons, and I think each and every one of us has to find our specific reason for chanting. And I can't tell you how to feel inspired. You have to figure that out. What inspires you? You know, someone is going out preaching. What are they praying? Or what are they thinking when they're chanting? Some of you Sankirtan devotees. What are you thinking before you go out and distribute books?
To be instrumental.
To be instrumental. So you're chanting, let me be instrumental in spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement. Pretty nice. Or a mother may be chanting, please let my child be Krishna conscious. I mean, so I think each and every one of us has a different approach to the holy names. To prematurely take a motivation that really doesn't fit us doesn't work. For example, in the last verse of the Shishashka, Lord Chaitanya says, Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace. You may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me. You're completely free to do anything and everything, and you will remain my worshipful Lord unconditionally. That's fine. But who feels like that? Anyone feel like that? Krishna. Oh, you do. That's good. Krishna, crush me by your embrace. Do anything you want to me. I don't feel like that. I think, Krishna, don't do anything you want to me. Don't crush me. You know, make things nice. So, you know, if you thinking in a way or trying to motivate yourself in a way that's not on your level of devotional service, you may actually just get disconnected at that particular point. I mean, for example, Queen Kunti in the Bhagavatam, she is praying, Tatra, Tatra, Jagat Guru, which means again and again, Krishna, send me miseries. Now, I'm not going to pray like that. Anyone here want to pray like that? She was praying, Krishna, send me more misery so I will not see apunarbhavadarsana. I will not see repeated birth and death of this material world. In other words, keep reminding me about the miseries of this world. I am not ready to pray like that. Prabhupada said, don't pray like that. Prabhupada said, the material world is miserable enough as it is. You know, please send me more and more miseries. I pray the opposite. Please don't send me more miseries. I've had enough, Krishna. So in other words, the prayer has to be in accordance with our level of spiritual advancement. Don't imitate a pure devotee. All right. How can I become more stable in my spiritual life? How long do we have? What is
it?
What?
You know about Sankirtan festival today afternoon?
Oh, there. No, I don't know anything.
You should also be
there. I should also be there?
It's up to you. Sankirtan festival.
Well, we'll see. We will see. How can I become more? Because I just got off of 24 hours of flying in an airplane, so you have to be compassionate to the fallen souls. Bunch of kalpataruvias. They are full of compassion to the fallen conditioned souls. So how can I become more stable in my spiritual life? Example, when I'm with friends in the temple or on a youth trip, I am loving to chant, but when I come home, I am not inspired to chant. I know I feel so good when I do it. Well, same answer. You got to figure a reason for chanting. If you have a reason to do something that really is from your heart rather than from the head. From the head means the reason I'm chanting is I want to be a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and go back to Godhead and get rid of this material world. That sounds like a robot. I'm not saying it's not your reason, but the reason for chanting has to come from you. Like, I want to chant because I want to be connected to Krishna. I want to chant because I want to help this devotee. I want to be empowered in Krishna consciousness. I want to chant because whatever. Whatever. But you have to think of a reason. And then, even if you're not with friends who are chanting, you'll chant. Just like I was recently on an airplane, and I wasn't with friends who were chanting. You know, I was sitting next to demon. Oh, sorry. So, no, that's teasing. You know, sitting next to whoever, you know, maybe they were eating flesh or something like that. And I was chanting because it connects me with Prabhupada. And I love Prabhupada. You know, that's it. Not because I have to chant. If you chant because you have to chant, it doesn't work. If you do things because you have to do it, ultimately you'll rebel. Everything that I've ever been forced to do, I do the opposite. And that's a natural inclination. The worst thing you can do is force someone to chant. The worst thing the parents can do is force their kids to chant. It's the worst thing. I've seen parents who force their kids not only to chant, but to wake up early in the morning. I have one disciple who was forced to get up at 3 o'clock every morning when he was 7 years old and take care of the deities. Poor guy. And now he's been traumatized. You ever heard of PTSD? Post-traumatic stress disorder? He's so traumatized by that he can't get up earlier than 8 o'clock in the morning. So anything you're forced to do, I mean, for example, when I was young, I wasn't forced to chant, thank God. I'm almost happy that my parents weren't Krishna conscious. because then I could rebel and become Krishna conscious. So anyway, so I'll give an example. When I was young, my mother, who I love, forced me to eat certain things, which are vegetarian. And now it's taken me 50 years to eat those, to start to eat those things again. Finally started. But, you know, I'll tell you what it was. It was like beetroot. You know, everyone knows what beetroot is? Mm-hmm. You know, in Russian, it's called borscht. You heard of borscht? Yeah. Ooh. So, my mother forced me to drink it and eat it. And so, for every time devotees would bring me, say, oh, some beets. I would just, I start sweating and fainting. It's like if someone goes in the army, you know, they hear some gun shooting and they become traumatized, see some dead bodies. So I had the same experience with beets. Finally, after seeing a psychiatrist for 20 years about beets, I never saw a psychiatrist, but I somehow or other I adjusted my mind so I could eat them again. But so it's the same thing with chanting. Don't chant because you have to chant. Chant because you choose to chant. Think, I'm choosing to chant. And then again, it comes to the same thing. You have a reason. I'm choosing to chant either to please my spiritual master, or I'm choosing to chant to connect to Krishna, or I'm choosing to chant because I want to get that HELL out of this material world. You know, there's different reasons. But find your reason and say, I am choosing. Just rephrase it. Rephrase it. I am choosing to chant because of my own reasons. I don't have to do anything. Be rebellious. I don't have to do anything. And that's right. That's right. I don't. Whatever I do in spiritual life, I do because I want to. I choose to do it for a reason, a Krishna conscious reason. Okay. How do you see the future of ISKCON youth in our movement? How can they fit in, participate, and be integrated? Very good question. Well, I think we have to consider what it means to fit in, participate, and be integrated. I think many of the youth that are brought up, I mean the majority of the youth that have been brought up in the last 20 or 30 years are not going to, this may shock some people, are not going to be interested in assuming many of the external cultural details of Krishna consciousness, like, you know, wearing dhotis and saris and stuff like that, and may want to be Krishna conscious within their own culture. And I think that, in general, that applies to people who are not part of our society right now. That if we want to attract more people, if we want to attract more people to our society, we have to be able to present Krishna consciousness without the cultural barriers that many people see. In other words, if you want to be Krishna conscious, you have to dress in a certain way, you have to eat unhealthy food until you get diabetes and heart disease. You know, so there's many external cultural, or you have to play certain instruments. You know, if you play the guitar, you're in Maya. I know. So, you know, if you don't like the sounds of the whompers that are destroying your eardrums. It's interesting, devotees, some of us older folks, we've had so many loud kirtans that even when the kirtan's not going on, we can hear the cartels. Did you know that? We become so Krishna conscious that we hear cartels 24 hours a day. Of course, technically in medicine that's called tinnitus, when you hear a ringing all the time. So if we're going to keep our ISKCON youth, we have to be able to have our youth be comfortable in Krishna consciousness and also comfortable dealing with the outside. I don't want to say outside, there's another wrong word. Dealing with the normal, I don't want to say that either. Dealing with the demon, no, I don't want to say demon either. Dealing with society at large. Because our movement, if we're ever going to be successful, which success to me means changing the whole society, as the Bhagavatam says, creating a revolution in the misdirected lives of an impious civilization, we're going to have to learn how to integrate Krishna consciousness into society at large. I remember when I joined the Krishna consciousness movement, practically all of us, we wanted to create a revolution. In the 1960s, it was a time of revolution. We wanted to change the world. Particularly, there were a lot of wars going on, the Vietnam War and everything going on. But so, to me, Krishna consciousness meant changing the world, changing people, changing the world, and actually, ultimately, having Krishna conscious leaders in the government. So that's inspiring. So the youth, ISKCON youth, have to have some inspiring goal. Otherwise, you know, Krishna consciousness may not be so inspiring to them. People have to be inspired. I mean, so, and also, everyone should be engaged according to their psychophysical nature. In other words, you have to be able to do things in Krishna consciousness that you like to do. It's called varnashram. Like, everybody has their own psychophysical nature. You know, some people are Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. Some people like to make money. Some people like to study. Some people like to manage, boss around other people. That's a joke. And some people, they just like to work with their hands and do artwork. So you should be able to do whatever you, like Prabhupada said, you know, whatever you want, whatever is your propensity, you should be able to do it for Krishna. Just like I'm working according to my propensity. I like to talk, I like to teach, I like to study. And my studies right now are not only Krishna conscious. I study sometimes history, I study sometimes science, and I use it in Krishna consciousness. And so it keeps me young and active. So for the youth, there has to be something exciting. And also, there has to be opportunity for the youth to take responsibility. When I joined Krishna consciousness, it was understood after 6 months you were going to go out and open up a new temple. I was giving Sunday feast class after 6 months, and I was opening up new temples. And after 1 year, I was in a new continent helping to start Krishna consciousness, South America. 1 year. Without any money, without any facility, just like Prabhupada. Many of us did this. Many of us did this. Just like Prabhupada came to the Western world without any, with very little money, with only his books. And so nowadays, there may be not so much room for upward mobility. You know, you can join the Hare Krishna movement, you youth, and for the next 10 years, wash pots. And you know, then after that, we'll let you, what will we let you do? Lead kirtan. And then after 20 more years, we'll let you get married. And after 40 more years, what are we going to do? We'll let you have kids. I mean, it's not so exciting. Anyways, actually, what happened? Yeah, so I was starting temples after 6 months in the movement. I was initiated after 6 months in the movement. Went to India, and then what happened? And then I took sannyas when I was 28 years old. It's exciting. Nowadays, to take sannyas, not that I'm encouraging anyone here to take sannyas or sannyasinis. Now to take sannyas, you have to be probably at least 50 and pass all sorts of tests, Brahmabhuta tests, you know, where they stick you in a underwater in the middle of the winter. You know, we had that. Well, I went to Finland 1 year and they did that to me. We went swimming in the ice. Did you ever do that? Went swimming in the ice and we had a competition. Who could stay in the ice the longest without dying? Andrew, you know about this. And then, what do? Then you run into the sauna after that. And the sauna is like 100 degrees centigrade. And then you have to stay there as long as possible before you cook. And in the sauna, Mathura knows about this, they start hitting you with branches. So this is the test. Anyway, so just go to Finland. Actually, they do that. In Finland, it's considered fun. Right? Mathura is all excited about it now. But I don't think it's fun. Anyway, so there has to be more room for taking responsibility or doing something if we want to encourage the youth. And if there's room for that, then I think many more youth will want to participate and be enthusiastic. And there has to be opportunities. And that means also some of the old people like me have to step aside and retire. Okay? This is a difficult one. Where does ego finish and self-esteem starts? Okay. False ego. False ego means to think, you know, that I'm the greatest, I'm being proud of everything I do. And real ego, self-esteem, means I'm doing something nice, but it's empowered by Krishna. Krishna's using me as an instrument. When you could think like that, that's self-esteem. That's good self-esteem. Here's an interesting quote. We shouldn't think less of ourselves, but we should think of ourselves less. Does that make sense? Let me unpack that. We shouldn't think negatively about ourselves. We shouldn't say, oh, I'm just a conditioned soul, I'm so low, I'm lower than the stool on the street. You know, just like, oh, useless, I'm hopeless. Oh, I'm horrible. You don't think like that. You just don't. I don't even think about myself. You know, whatever I am, I am. And I'm just trying to please Krishna. And if someone appreciates what I've done, then I see Krishna there. I become very happy. If someone says, oh, Maharaj, you led a nice kirtan, or Maharaj, you played a good game of volleyball. So, then it just encourages me. But I don't think it's due to my ability or my potency or my intelligence. I think it's due to Krishna. So it helps me admire Krishna. When I see something, if I ever do something well, then I say it's Krishna empowering me. Like Krishna says in the Gita, I'm this intelligence of the intelligent, the strength of the strong, etc. Your thoughts of, here's a controversial one that's going to get me in trouble. Your thoughts about turning to veganism. I am a devotee, but I do follow a vegan lifestyle. And the reason I do that is that I'm a demon. And I don't like cows. No, that's not the reason. The reason I do that is I do love cows. And several things. First of all, I would not take milk that comes from cows that are going to be mistreated, cows that will have their calves taken away from them, cows that are not allowed to live their full lives. That's the first thing. Second thing, and this is even more controversial, that if I take milk, it's just from Deshi cows. That means cows with certain breeds. And if you want to find out the reason for that, ask me later. And thirdly, if I take milk from Deshi cows that are being well taken care of for the rest of their lives and all their calves are being taken care of, I will take very little. One Ayurvedic physician I spoke to, actually several, several Ayurvedic physicians I spoke to told me that one of the main reasons that the older devotees are getting these lifestyle diseases is they're taking too many milk products. Prabhupada said the maximum amount of milk an adult should take is 8 ounces a day. 8 ounces is, well, there's no glass here, but any, oh, there is? 8 ounces is that glass full of milk, or equivalent. And the devotees, I know they like their paneer sabji. You know, paneer, you know, big pieces of paneer, paneer steaks, ice cream, sweet rice, what else?
Rasgullas.
Burfi. Okay. So there's too much consent. It's not just my personal opinion. This is the opinion of Ayurvedic doctors, the opinion of Western doctors. I have a series of health discussions that I had with a doctor that's on the internet, YouTube, if you ever want to look it up. It's called Stop Killing the Devotees. And the reason for that is because I feel that the diet that's been given to a lot of our devotees and a lot of the temples is deadly. You know, of course, we're trying to get the devotees back to Godhead as soon as possible. Isn't that the idea? You know, you're not your body, so chaktva deham purna janma. Give it up. So, yes, lifestyle diseases. Not only from taking too many milk products, but too much sugar. I have devotees who have severe cases of diabetes that had to have their feet or legs chopped off. That's what happens with diabetes, in case you haven't figured that out. Many cases of cancer. Many cases of Parkinson's disease. Anyone's heard of Parkinson's disease? That's when someone's shaking like that. Another what we call lifestyle disease. Another thing about health is I find that devotees don't exercise enough. We were just speaking about this in the car coming here, that there was a recent study of old people, you know, people who are 65, that's really old. I'm only 38. So anyway, there was a group of people who were 65 who had dementia. Dementia means they couldn't remember a lot of different things, like who they were, you know, where they were. And so they took half of the group, this is called a controlled scientific study, they took half the group and made them exercise every day for about 45 minutes. And the other half, they just allowed to live what we call a sedentary lifestyle. And so the half that exercised regained their mental faculties. Interesting. So I find in general the devotees don't pay enough attention to health. And it's not just about veganism or taking too much milk. It's a question of understanding what's good for you and adjusting your lifestyle. What you eat, how you act, how much you sleep. Don't sleep too little, don't sleep too much, and then you'll be healthier. So I think we should research these things, and that's an individual thing. Some people need to sleep 5 hours a night, some people need to sleep 8 hours a night, whatever. Okay, so if someone wants to be a vegan, that's fine. But mainly it should be for ethical and then later on health reasons. And you can still be healthy drinking the right amount of milk. When Prabhupada talked about milk being necessary for brain development, that meant the proper amount of milk, not too much. And Prabhupada didn't take a tremendous amount of milk. Prabhupada wasn't like the devotees nowadays. When Prabhupada took a milk sweet, he just took a little bite out of it. It's not like the brahmacharis here, when they have glubjamans, they'll eat 30 of them at one sitting. They'll have a glubjaman eating contest. Did you ever do that? Thank God. I remember many years ago, we had a honey drinking contest. It was Balaram's appearance day, so we would see who could drink. What's that? I think we're going to have to end soon, right? Is that right? Baladev, what's that? Do we have to end sometime? Or? No. Okay. Okay. How can I preach without doing Sankirtan? Well, you go on the internet. That's a good way to preach. There's different ways to preach Krishna consciousness. Just somehow or other, whoever you meet, whoever you come in contact with, try to give them some Krishna consciousness. Just give them prasadam if you can't do Sankirtan for one reason or other. How can I get inspiration for chanting? We already talked about that. How can we be... We did. We already talked about that. Whatever inspires you. Whatever inspires you. Different things inspire us. How can we be unattached when we don't get what we want? There's a negative again, unattached. Well, hate to deal with negatives. Be attached to something else. That's all. Just like if you have a little kid, little baby, a good parent knows that you just don't grab the toy away from the kid, because you're going to be stuck with a screaming demon. Screaming. Anyway. Screaming whatever. And I hear them all the time. When I fly, go somewhere, the parents, they just take this something away from the kid. You give them something else. That's all. So, first of all, what we want, this is also an interesting question. We have to figure out why we want what we want, because it indicates some need. Let's say I want a new mobile phone. Okay, let's use that for example. And if I don't get it for Christmas, then I get upset. So why do you want that new mobile phone? Well, I want that new mobile phone to serve Krishna, so I can, preach on the internet or whatever it is. And so you concentrate on the why question, and then the what is less important, because then you figure out another strategy for doing the what, for doing the why. So we get attached to the what very often, and we're not thinking of the why. It's again, it's the same point. We don't think of why we're doing something, when we're doing something, or why we want something. And there's always an alternative strategy. Okay, that's the end of the questions. Anyone else have a question? No, everyone's so quiet. Questions, comments? Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. How or who decides who is an acharya or spiritual master? If I were to explain to someone outside, in this case, it was a
who decides who is an acharya or spiritual master?
Who or what decides?
I think Krishna decides that.
Who?
Krishna, you heard of him? He's that nice person on the altar there. So anyway, I think he decides who is empowered. Because when you're talking about spiritual master or acharya, that's not a question of appointment. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada's spiritual master, was asked, you know, who will be the next acharya? And then he indicated that was something. First of all, he wanted his movement, which is called the Gaudiya Math, organized by consensus or a democracy amongst the leaders. And secondly, he said that acharya will always be self-effulgent. Self-effulgent means... whoops. How bright. Just like, how do you decide the sun lights up the daytime? You know, how do you decide which is the most significant celestial object as far as we're concerned on Earth? You don't have to decide. It's the sun. Right? Does that make sense? It's not that, you know, I have to tell you, well, the most celestial, a significant celestial object for us is Venus or Mars or Pluto or Sagittarius. Well, Sagittarius is kind of nice. But anyway, so how do you decide it? It's Krishna decides, and then it's obvious by the symptoms. Like we see with Prabhupada, wasn't it obvious that he's the acharya?
Well, yeah, but how do you explain that to an outside person?
Look what Prabhupada did. I mean, it's just objective. The Srila Prabhupada, without any material facility, came to the Western world and within 11 years had like 100 temples. And he fulfilled Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's prediction that in every town and village, Krishna's name would be chanted. I mean, that's pretty objective, isn't it? That's how one ascertains, by the symptoms. One can ascertain that someone is an acharya. It's not that no ecclesiastical board or management board can appoint someone to be an acharya. And that's what happened in the Gaudiya Math when Prabhupada's spiritual master left. They appointed certain people, and those people had spiritual difficulty, but the appointment didn't do any good. You don't make a sannyasi by giving them sannyas. The sannyasa ceremony is simply a ceremony. And you don't take initiation. You're not initiated just by sitting at a fire sacrifice and getting your name. Like one time there was a devotee who sat at a fire sacrifice with Prabhupada, and Prabhupada gave him a name, and then he went away. The next day Prabhupada said, I accepted him, but he did not accept me. So, you know, basically it's a question... It's a question of having the qualities. And these are objective qualities. And it's not that you can label someone to be a guru and he's a guru. He's not necessarily. There may be people who have been given the ability to have disciples or initiate disciples who are not actually qualified. The GBC and the International Society of Krishna Consciousness does not certify people. It just says that people, the GBC, which I'm a member, says that certain people fulfill certain minimum requirements. But it's up to the prospective disciple to determine if that person is actually qualified. That's your responsibility. It's not that automatically, you know, someone gets approved. I mean, I remember years ago there was someone who was just approved to be a guru, and he's actually a very nice devotee. I know him very well, and he is qualified. But anyway, so he was approved to give initiation, and the other devotees said to me, "Wow, when did he get his pure devotee initiation?" And I said, "Well, if there's such an initiation, just by becoming a guru, you become a pure devotee. I mean, we should initiate everybody like that." He goes, "It's not. It doesn't work. One has to have the qualities. And we should see if someone has the qualities." And the qualities are listed in the Shastras. And that's how you that's how you can determine. But it's Krishna who appoints guru. And Krishna appoints Acharya. And Krishna, that's between Krishna and the spiritual master and the person. Okay? Yes?
I have a question about the mind, because they say a lot of things that they have to control the mind. That sometimes the mind is like the evil, you have to be controlling it. And if you are chanting, you have to just think of Krishna. And I don't. If I try to, I start getting stressed, or I start thinking more, or then that, like, after that, I feel worse, or then I feel better when I don't. So I don't really know what to do about that, or if his mind is bad, or it's normal to be like that.
Of course, they're referring to the statement in the Gita where it says the mind is the friend of the conditioned soul, is the enemy as well. The uncontrolled mind is the enemy. So I think instead of trying to control the mind, one should try to fix the mind on something connected to Krishna that appeals to you. I mean, all of us, according to our specific psychophysical nature, have service that appeals to us in Krishna consciousness. So, like I said before, when I chant, I specifically have the sankalpa, or motivation of something that appeals to me. And that may be, you know, trying to help someone. You know, that's my particular nature. I'm not trying to impose that on anyone else. But something that's important to you. What's important? So, in other words, go to the whys. One exercise I often do with people is I try to get to their basic motivation. And the exercise is very simple. That someone says, "I chant." And then I say, "Why?" And they say, "Because I want to be Krishna conscious." And then, guess what I say?
Why?
Why? And they say, "Because I want to please my spiritual master." Why? You know, because in that way I'll go back to God. And why? You know, so you keep doing whys until you can't get any more whys out of the person. And then you get to the basic reason, because I want to be happy. You know, maybe it's that. I'm not saying it's that in every case. I want to be happy. I want to fit in with the Hare Krishna cult. I know. Want to have friends. You know, whatever. So, there's always a basic need. This is, this gets down to a course that I teach in empathic, what I call empathic communication. There's always a basic need behind each and every one of our activities. Basic need, if anyone studied psychology, there was a psychologist many years ago named Maslow, and he talks about a hierarchy of needs. We all have basic needs. And I mentioned this briefly before. We have a need for air, food, water. It's called a pyramid or triangle. So, and ultimately we have a need to connect to Krishna. So we focus on our needs. You know, why am I chanting? What is my basic need that I'm trying to fulfill or comply with while I'm chanting? You know, and connection. I want to connect to Krishna. So, in that way, if you focus on something positive, see, The problem, as I mentioned before, and I keep mentioning over and over again, is that we go too much to the negative with things. Like, you know, demons, we started this... Whoops. You're liberated, got hit by Bhagavad Gita. So, killed by the Bhagavad Gita. So we... That's perfection of life. But fortunately, it's not a full Bhagavad Gita. So, we harp too much on negatives and we try to do the negative. I got to control the mind. The mind is a demon. It's thinking of what it shouldn't be thinking of. I mean, the more you try not to do something, to think of what you're not supposed to think of, the more you think of it, which is really amazing. Like if I use this example. Let's say I mention a pink elephant. Everybody think of a pink elephant in their mind. You know, pink elephant? Okay. Don't think of it. Stop it. Don't think of the pink elephant anymore. Don't. I order you not to think of the pink elephant. And so, naturally, because we have a need, there's another need, autonomy, then automatically the mind is going to think of the pink elephant. What is this guy telling me? No. So... That's the mind. The more we try not to do something in our mind, the more we'll do it. So instead, I don't try not to do anything. Anyway, you can't do a don't. It's impossible. It's a double negative. So I just try to think of what I want to think of. What do I want to think of? You know, what's important to me in this life? You know, Prabhupada and... You know, for me, of course, Prabhupada, it's important, other people. You know, I love other people. I want other people to be connected to Krishna. Or if I'm going on Sankirtan, I want people to take the books, or anything. Anything that's connected to Krishna. So think of something connected to Krishna and use that to motivate you. It's all a question of motivation. But you can't be motivated by a negative. And if you do that, you'll find it's quite easy to chant. At least I find it quite easy. But that motivation, reason has to come from you. You know, what's important? Think about it. What's important to you in life? Who do you love? Where do you want to be? You know, what's your goal in life? What's your purpose? Think about it. It's all positive. Please, then, if I can leave all of you with any sort of thought today, please don't go to negatives. Don't do this non-devotee. You know, I'm a demon. I'm miserable. The mind's my enemy. I mean, all this negative stuff, I'm tired of it. I just want to be positive, you know. Just whatever, you know. Does that make sense? Just be positive, you know. You join a religion, you hear all these negatives. And then you get to all these words that are negative, too. You know, you call people, not only demons, you know, rakshasas, non-devotees, meat-eaters, malechas, yavanas, karmis, all these negative words, you know, wow. You know, of course you're a Christian, then you also have negative words too. Infidel, or heathen, and if you're Muslim, you know. Coffee, you know. So it turns out that most religions, that practically every religion, people tend to be less connected than most of the people in religions tend to be less connected than people outside of religions. The reason is because you get into all this negative nomenclature, you know, these negative words. The religions may be very good. It's not a criticism of the religion itself. It's a criticism of the way people practice the religion. Because you really get into putting negative labels on people, on negative labels on yourself. And then it turns out that you, like in the Christian church, they have this thing called self-flagellation they used to have in the Catholic church. You ever heard of that before? It means where they just hit each other or hit themselves. Okay, the brahmacharis, let's become spiritually advanced. Boom! You know, you take some whips and chains, and then the devotees come out of the brahmacharis, I'm all bloodied up. I'm realizing I'm not the body today. Years ago, I went to this museum called Ripley's Believe It or Not. And half of the museum had the tortures that people went into in the monasteries in the old days. There were these hair shirts, you know. There's this like coffin-like thing that had pins on all sides that you couldn't move, because if you move, you got these pins sticking in on you. There were racks. You know what a rack is? Stretch. It's good for the back, actually. There were racks there. I mean, it was just like, huh? And that was their religious practice. So, I mean, of course, we don't do that, do we? No, I just got to check. You got to visit the Brahmachari Ashram. You know, just like, oh, no. And then, when you get into negative words, it's all you think about. I'll give you a practical example. Like, when I first joined the movement, that it was more like a family atmosphere. We had men and women in the movement, but really, nobody got disturbed thinking the other one was Maya. But as soon as it became prominent, you heard that the men heard that women were Maya, and the women heard that men were Maya, that's how you looked at them. You understand? You looked at each other as objects of sense gratification rather than considering spirit souls. So there's this whole introduction of negative nomenclature for the opposite sex. Instead of just thinking, brothers and sisters, all trying to serve Krishna together. Actually, this whole Mataji thing started then. Did you know that in all the Vedic literatures that women are not called Matajis? That's a Hindi word. That's it. That became an ISKCON thing, Then you say, oh, Mataji. But I'm only 16 years old. How can I be your Mataji? And you're 92, Mataji. sometimes people come and visit the Sunday feast for the first time, a young girl, and say, oh, Mataji, please come here. Mataji. So we have all this nomenclature. Some of it, it's kind of funny like that. And some of it's, just negative, puffed up. We have our own language, puffed up. If you go out, if you tell someone out there, outside the four walls of this temple, you're puffed up. I'll say, what? Huh? are my glands swollen? What's wrong? So I think we should try to be positive whenever possible. I mean, obviously we have no's, like no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. But we have a lot of pluses, positives too. Probably one time jokingly said, well, we have a lot of donuts. donuts. You know what a donut is? Donut is like something with a hole in it that you eat. So we have a lot of donuts, but we don't do nots. So I just like to be positive. It's just like life is too crazy anyway. Without thinking negatively about people or things like that. I want to have fun. Does anyone here doesn't want to have fun? Anyone here wants to be miserable? Raise your hand. Life has been for fun, and Krishna conscious fun. I'm having fun being Krishna conscious. I go all over the world having fun. What a life. When I go places, they ask, you know, immigration, they ask me, what do you do for a living? I'm retired. Okay. I think it's time for prasadam, isn't it? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shishi Pancha Tattva Ki Jai. Gornatai Ki Jai.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.